Well, thank you, Urs, and thank you, the organizers, for putting together this very interesting symposium on such a hot topic. I will be presenting some work on coupling laser scanner data that we've recently, we only have one season of results and unfortunately only a few dates to show, with multispectral thermal imagery as well from this UAV. And the goal of this study is really to identify, assess basically spatial and temporal variability of different cropping systems, mainly corn and wheat. And we're fighting this battle together with Brian Eagleford, who's my graduate student. So I think that I come from a crop modeling background, and I have used any sources of tools or system that allowed me to apply the model in a spatial context. And so that goes back to more than 15 years ago when I started doing my PhD of applying crop models for precision agriculture. And so back then we're initially remote sensing from satellite, and then moved on to the airplane. So one of the main benefits of the UAVs, besides this assessment that obviously what we have heard, and just, I'll echo what the speakers before me told me about, the advantages about the high resolutions and, the improved temporal. You can basically just pick up the system and fly. But in the end, I really want to give a pragmatic type of talk, how we as a scientist can help both the industry in this in this field as well as the farmers. And I'll tell you why, because I work directly with them and they have a major interest in using UAV and don't necessarily know what they get into, when they learn all the complications and so on. So a scouting tool, I will really put that. It's one of the highest, value and benefits from this system. Obviously, nutrient and water deficiency from any sorts, including pests, weeds, and other stresses. But I particularly have an interest in, and that's one of the reasons I moved into UAV, it's to be able to see if they were able to detect plant stands. There is a very large plant-to-plant variability, and the number of plants per square meter drive the yield. You'd probably be surprised, but probably you already know, the world record this year of corn for 2-3 years in a row, this year is just a little bit bigger, was 455 bushels, basically 28 tons of grains, and they were obtained with 12 plants per square meter. So if you miss a plant, it's a missing yield. And the knowledge, because I use crop models, it's a very important input. And that the crop model that I use accounts for that input, not that if you increase and you put 13, 14, you'll get a greater yield, but accounts for barrenness and prolificacy if you have, excessive or poor stands. So that really what drove me. And so as soon as I joined Michigan State 2 years ago, I just went ahead and bought one of the best systems at the moment when I bought it, and you'll see what it is in a minute. So the objective of the research overall, again, is my background is completely in crop modeling as well. I have studied in remote sensing, but it's to detect and assess the spatial variability of fields. And as well as temporal within, obviously, the same season, and how this spatial pattern, remains stable over time. So I have different sensors on the UAV, and so I wanted to test the capability of the different sensors. Some of them very interesting and are rather innovative in agriculture, the use of laser scanning data. So again, to integrate the benefits of detecting these areas of heterogeneity or homogeneity, if you want to put it the other way around, including other spatial layers. I use electrical resistivity tomography, which doesn't give information about the plants, but rather on the soil, has an on-the-go sensor just to detect how many layers of information and how they integrate. But most of all, I really believe, I'm a strong believer, that a very beneficial layers of information comes from yield mapping. And so This is the system that we have, the UAV from Micro Drones in Germany, and rather expensive, and obviously it performs well when we do everything right, and is equipped by digital video camera, thermal camera, multispectral, and laser scanner. It has an amazing resolution of, you know, less than an inch, 1 to 8 centimeters. And some of the images you'll see are about, you know, 54 millimeters, 5.5 centimeters. Payload is 3 pounds, about 1.5 kilo, and flies for 30 to 45 minutes with one battery. We basically fly the entire day because we have three batteries and a generator that we have enough time to, because you can only put one sensor at a time. And so we basically have flown, we have fun testing different routes and spend, you know, the entire day, mainly Ryan, in the field trying to get the best type of data. We are authorized, we have a COA, it took us about 1 year to get. But we're still puzzled with how to deal with passengers, you know, that the test exams, you know, the pilot requires to learn about it. So another interesting fact about the COA, that there was an editorial in Nature a couple of months ago that private universities cannot fly. So basically Stanford cannot fly in UAV, and I think that's, for me, sufficient to say that I want to stay in Michigan State so I can fly, you know, the UAV. Because of, you know, several, I work closely with farmers and get quite a bit of support from the commodity group, I decided that I wanted to test, obviously, the very cheap device we've been talking about, you know, the happy snapshot images and so on. What can they do for farmers? Because obviously they can't afford that over 100,000 type of, you know, system, which includes the device as well as the, you know, the sensors. So with this, you know, nearly basically $1,000, you get amazing type of images, but obviously not from the scientific, you know, point of view being interested. But at the moment, you know, when I received, you know, a lot of phone calls and saying, what UAV should I buy? And I say, I don't have a dealership, you know, I don't know. Depends on your interest, how much money you want to spend. But you'll be surprised that, obviously, you know, even many farmers put themselves together, they will never pay off 100,000 UAV in the management just because we don't know enough. Partially through not knowing enough about the science in relation to the spatial variability, but mainly because I always put in this perspective, being in this field for several years, is that even if we were to able, and in some cases we're really close in detecting exactly how much nitrogen the plant has taken up at a certain time in the phenology, in the crop cycle, how does the farmer help them in knowing what they should put afterwards? You know, so in addition to dealing with indices, what the company delivers to them are indices that they're meaningless to them. You know, so one of the questions that I ask when, you know, why do you want to buy a UAV? Well, they say, first they say they're cool, they look cool, but also they're good scouting tools. Yes, that's very true, they're good scouting tools. But then the other question is, do you have U mappings? And they said, yes, of course. And they're all happy about it. You know, I have since, you know, 1994, you know, when Frank Pierce, one of the pioneers, put the first book of precision agriculture together. Have you used them? Do you use them to make a change? I said, no, we don't. So why would you want to have a UAV, you know, that detects? I mean, that you get information that sometimes may not help you directly in making a change in that variability. So I am an optimistic person, people that know me, so in general I still want to be able to help them in a way that they can make a change in when they need to make the change. So again, my background coming in crop modeling, I asked them, says, well, you would not know what the weather is whether you knew about how much nitrogen the plant has taken up at that particular phase. So that's highly dependent on what comes afterwards. And so again, that's where I link the two systems. So that's the type of images you get from the Phantom, and I know just about anyone has one of these guys, and they fly. They'll be very sad to know that they can't fly it on the. I still think that it will be so hard to take them to court to say, I didn't make any change. I lost money by buying. I want a reimbursement. You know, so that's because I thought they could use it on their own land. I thought they could use it up to a certain height within, they own the air up to a certain, I think it was like 10 meters or so. But I guess it's, you know, they changed it. So the regulation will really drive how this system or the industries, you know, take on. But we continue to use them, and the sensors are, you have seen better pictures than this today. It's so visible, multispectral, thermal, and the laser scanner. So obviously the system is completely autonomous. It goes up in predetermined locations, and it takes images with different, you know, with overlaps, and so then you have to do the elaborate work of mosaic them and stitch them. So I presented again, we only have 1 year of, because even though we bought it in the fall of last year, it took a year to get the approval, the COA, and then the season. We started with wheat, and looking at interesting aspects, I thought, you know, the fusarium, both the rust, you know, the Puccinia septoria and the steganospora. And this is a trial done in collaboration with the extension office, which they then collaborated with all the other companies. And so this is a wheat crop. You can see some of the management there. And the treatments were both foliar fungicide efficacy, as well as the growth regulator, palisade, and timing. So for each of them, and the head blight fungicide efficacy trial. So the experiment for the foliar had varied time of application, the rates, the mixes of different fungicide. We were interested in see if we could spot any diseases plots versus others that didn't have the disease. And for the other study, we looked at the lodging of the growth regulator, and then detection of the head blight was what we were interested in. So that's the blown up photo of the foliar fungicide efficacy, the control. You could see some basically detection. And unfortunately, this time of year, we did not have any other sensors. They weren't delivered to us. So we had just to use the visible RGB band. So the growth regulator, again, was able to do a good job in spotting areas where normally there were not significant signs, but where they were, you know, we could see them, and possibly in relation to the fungicide, but that's, we're not so sure about that. So the what we learned, that if the images are taken at an angle versus a straight shot, you'll be able to see, you know, the diseases, the head blight. And so if you take it versus. And that's interesting aspect. We saw this as blown up of a picture we took. And so if you go on the side, you basically are still able at 45 degrees angle to have you know, sign detected that versus 90 degrees where you basically are not able to see you know, that the head of the wheat. And it's just basically a guess that it's there. We had a cold winter, as probably many of you in the Midwest realized, and there were damages even in the wheat, despite the fact of the cold, you know, resistance, but it was the high storm that really damaged. So there were significant damage of high smoothland areas, and so the UAV was able to detect those areas. Obviously, not much to do with that, besides, you know, not doing things like spraying or other stuff. Then this collaboration with the extension office, we had nitrogen trials, and some were reps from the other experiments, and so compared different nitrogen trials and be able to see differences, obviously visible when compared to the highest treatment of 80 pounds per acre. So when we moved to the maize fields, we had two sites, one basically west of East Lansing and one southwest, and both characterized by pretty large variability brought into rain in one case, you know, typical glacial soils. And so the yield maps of this field we all had and we create, so again, I'm not going to show any of those, you know, modeling results and stability maps, but we create areas and understand how time and space go together in order to then apply the model and understand if they will help us, be able to help the farmers making a decision when the time is right. So pretty amazing type of variability, obviously driven by position in the landscape and, water movement across the landscape. So that's an image of the multispectral of that particular field, which resembles, you know, the visible very well. That's the only one we could produce with the green NDVI taken at the proper time during the season. The laser scanner imagery from the UAV, this is an image that I took with the people that had the UAV back in Germany, and we flew over this field. Very interesting results to be able. The reason I got it, again, I wanted to study plant height differences, and we haven't processed that data, but we have interesting information on that, and as well as developing high-resolution digital elevation models to, again, link to the model and water routing and so on. So the laser data come with 3D output. There's a picture associated with it, time, latitude, all the X, Y, and Z, the pitch and the roll, the azimuth, the distance, the angle. And so this is a little bit of a nightmare to deal with the data, but try to do always a better job. So that's a perspective side views of the trees, the two houses, and so that for that field in southwest Michigan, that described really well, you know, the terrain topography on both sides. But this is kind of the raw data. Some of the spikes obviously are not, you know, pointy hills, but artifacts of the measurements. So we haven't unfortunately processed. So when we received the sensor later, and then we had a problem with the UAV. So there was a chunk of the time during the season that we couldn't use it. On the other field, we were able to see the tree pretty clearly, and so the laser scanners, obviously high resolution of lines. So we think that it could be an interesting layer of information to detect plant height. These are the yield maps for the other field. That's the thermal imagery in the beginning of the season, and that's one section of the field of the multispectral imagery at a very high resolution of 5.4 centimeters on the ground. Doesn't have a red edge bend, so we plan to use the normalized difference red edge bend, possibly calculate the triple OCI index, which should lead into nitrogen uptake when converted into canopy nitrogen index. But would you need to know the biomass in order to account for the dilution effect. So, in conclusion, images from the UAV, the main thing that we found, obviously, were able to, whether it was a simple scouting tool like the cheap device, the DJI, that was able to detect pretty well the variability, obviously without informing necessarily what caused that variability in the first case. We do need to perform a much more post-processing data analysis. It's just a matter of time. We can show it today on the laser imagery and the work on the plane-to-plane variability since the resolution is so high. But really the main point, the message for me for you to take home is that we need to convert these images in something that the farmers can associate with. So the last thing that they need is another NDVI image. Since they had yield maps for 20 years, they had values of bushels per acre, and they couldn't associate about their variability. So the NDVI, which is a surrogate of biomass and canopy cover, may not relate to nitrogen at all. So it's not a nitrogen index. You need to look at the chlorophyll rate. You may have a nitrogen stress and have a lower biomass, but it could be because they couldn't get the water. And so there are series of more analysis to be done within the East index and when the indices are taken. The issues with the saturation of the index with LAI, or basically 2 is a little bit early, but normally we found 2.5 to 3, And so, you know, some of the images, if you correlate NDVI with yield later in the season, you know, you get a good correlation, but you, that's mostly saturated number values because it's already, you know, LAI is so high. So for yield estimation, that's a completely different topic. The farmer may not necessarily be interested in that. He's not really a commodity trader, but and there's plenty of that done already in that field. So I think the linkage between space and time needs to be done the way we, as a scientist, envision. You know, identify the areas and then link to a system approach that allows us to run scenario and see what if we can reproduce that variability, and also to see what are the chances of improving that system. And I thank you much indeed for your attention.
Thank you, Bruno. There's an online question, I guess, which we should address, so maybe could you read it out? Yeah, please.
Certainly. This general question is for all the presenters in the symposium that are trying to develop UAV sensors in their practical application to agriculture. What biological systems, such as birds, example hawks, insects, example dragonflies, mammals, example bats, etc., might be useful in helping improve UAV sensors for detecting canopy stress, pests, or nutrition problems? For example, the bat utilizes ultrasonic waves to find an insect pest without any visual clues to locate, capture, or consume its prey. Could that not be something that's studied to improve the UAV sensors?
Any of the speakers would like to provide an answer? I guess this was sort of more person probably wanted to share some.
Yeah, comment.
Give us some more of a comment.
I just
some
tried something.
Maybe Bruno.
No, I just want to say the birds will be less reliable than the UAV. You know, to catch them and control them.
So I just would like to make a couple of announcements. Tomorrow afternoon we will have another the general airborne satellite session. It's going to start at 2 o'clock in the Renaissance Ballroom 2, and there's also going to be a couple of presentations which deal with UAVs, and then at 3:40 we will have the business meeting.